This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 18th at 10:40 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Good Housekeeping and Popular Mechanics will publish excerpts of John Bolton's tell-all book.
When it comes to Bolton, didn't Trump actually do the house cleaning?
Not enough, apparently.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at all those shrewd politicians, also known as Snollygosters, who toil away in Ohio. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, an attorney is now running Ohio's response to the pandemic.
Sounds like a great idea. But first, the politics of police and calls to change the system. Governor Mike DeWine this week laid out his plan, a multi-point plan, of course, to improve policing, to keep people and officers safe, and to decrease the strife between officers and people of color.
This is a process. This is not just go do something and then move on. This is a process, and we must all commit to staying with that process for many, many months and many, many years ahead.
Here's some of the highlights. Multi-point, of course, as is DeWine's style. He wants to ban chokeholds, police chokeholds, in most situations. He would mandate independent investigators examine use of force incidents, and he wants the state to track and publish those incidents.
He would also require police recruits to pass a psychological test before they can go to the training academy, and he wants police officers to be licensed, much like teachers, barbers, and makeup artists have to be licensed.
There's no mechanism in Ohio to revoke a certificate for conduct that might be bad, might be horrible, but it's not necessarily criminal. Now it is the time, I believe, to begin treating peace officer certificates more like licenses. And in fact, they should be licenses.
The governor also wants more training, including 6 hours of de-escalation training for police officers this year.
No matter where an Ohio citizen lives, they deserve to be served by officers who receive a set number of advanced training hours each year.
More training, Mike. I think most people would say training police officers is a good thing. If you're on social media, you've probably seen a lot of memes lately about officers in Denmark and all parts of Europe needing much more training than officers here in the States. This is more than just setting up a task force to study the issue, right? He's making some serious calls. He's making very specific demands.
Yeah, banning chokeholds.
This is more than I thought he would do.
Was pretty firm. Licensing of police officers, that's a pretty strong stand. Also, you know, taking away the ability of police agencies to investigate themselves when it comes to use of force incidents. He wants the state to take over those, and he wants an independent prosecutor to look at all those cases. So, yeah, I guess you could say these are going to be controversial things, going to be tough for the lawmakers to pass, I think. You know,
whenever there is a moment, right, whenever there's something that triggers public policy, it tends to happen right then or not at all, right? That is what happens often with gun control policy. Whenever there's a mass shooting, we either get action right then or not at all. And so I think this is, if you want reform from police, if you're on the pro-reform side, if you're on the Black Lives Matter side, I think this is a wonderful indication that things are going to change. But again, there are some areas of this that are not that strong, like the licensing board. That would be made up of law enforcement professionals. It wouldn't be made up of independent people. It would be people in the industry, if you will, which is, I guess, is pretty normal, right? That's surely the way cosmetology licenses work, but it's not an independent body.
Yeah, but it would, the licensing, like for instance, if you're a teacher and you do something wrong in the classroom that's not criminal, but it's bad, and you shouldn't be teaching anymore. You can lose your teaching license.
Yeah,
I think that's what the governor's trying to go
at. The State Department
of
Education does that every time they meet. They revoke a bunch of teacher licenses.
You know, of course, this is all from the protests, the anti-racism protests, the protests condemning police brutality. DeWine, however, apparently did not consult with the Legislative Black Caucus, at least according to them. The caucus says these recommendations are not recommendations from black lawmakers. They want to get to the roots of racism before they get to these things. For example, DeWine's proposed ban on chokeholds is not absolute. Officers can still use chokeholds when they, quote, face a life or death situation. House Minority Leader Amelia Sykes says that's not good enough. She says that leaves too much room for interpretation.
because there is that subjectivity, it is absolutely true. Black bodies are viewed as weapons.
I think it would be hard to tell a police officer they cannot choke a suspect if they fear for their life, right? If you're in a wrestling match with an armed robbery suspect, say, and they have a gun and you have a chance to grab the person's neck, I think you'd be hard-pressed to tell the officer they can't do that. Now, at the same time, I certainly understand where Amelia Sykes is coming from. When you give people discretion, it can be abused. So, like we've said many, many times throughout this pandemic, throughout this police reform protest era, there's no perfect solution here. Well, I mean, you really going to tell a cop that he can never, or he or she can never choke someone if they have to? I mean, that's...
Well, that's... I think you're right. I think in a purely self-defense incident, yes, you would have to use everything at your disposal, including firing your weapon, save your life. But what happens is that's where the gray area is used by prosecutors and by defense attorneys and by police unions to say this officer feared for his life. And juries and prosecutors tend to defer to the officers. At least that's what history has shown us. That, like Rodney King, those officers claimed that they feared for their safety in their life, and then they beat him. Several of them, even though he was on the ground and incapacitated, really. And so that's what black lawmakers, African Americans, are saying. If you don't just ban them completely, that will let some officers off the hook if they use them inappropriately, because what they have to say is, I feared for my life.
And I wonder how many of these chokeholds actually do happen during very obvious life-threatening situations. I mean,
George Floyd obviously was not a life-threatening
situation.
Obviously
not.
And that's what I think DeWine is pointing to with this recommendation. That obviously was not an officer who feared for his life, and he was employing the chokehold. Eric Garner in New York was not a threat to that officer, but they were still employing the chokehold. Those are the things that Mike DeWine is getting at with this recommendation. But there's a loophole there. It's not absolute. Others are calling for an absolute ban on chokeholds.
You know, we're almost 24 hours after Governor DeWine announced this plan. We have heard crickets from police, from the Fraternal Order of Police. I think they're really trying to measuring their response. This is not a typical moment where they would just come out with, complete and total defense of police officers. With that video of George Floyd's killing, you can't, right? I mean, you can't just come out and say police are always right. And that's the Fraternal Order of Police has done that in the past. They've been very strong in defending officers. On a recent talk show here, the Ohio FOP president, Jay McDonald, he was, quite frankly, pretty candid with saying that the killing of George Floyd really appeared to be egregious. And that's pretty striking, because that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago, I don't think. So I'm really interested in why they've been silent for the first 24 hours after DeWine's plan was rolled out.
I think they're assessing it. They're probably not being completely quiet. My guess is there are calls being made to lawmakers quietly, to the Speaker of the House,
to the
Senate President.
They were supposedly involved with some discussion with DeWine on this.
Yeah, and what police officers argue is that if they put too much restrictions on police officers and they are in that deadly situation, that officers may hesitate to use deadly force, and that could cost them their lives. That's their argument. And there is some merit to that argument, but on the other hand, if they use force too quickly, it costs somebody else their life many times. So that's, again, we're trying to find that balance, because there are bad people out there who have guns, and officers have a dangerous job, but where is the appropriate use of force? And I think bringing independence to the investigations will help boost public confidence that when police use force, and if they use force appropriately, there's faith in the system.
It's really a common sense reform to have an independent body look at police. Police should not be investigating themselves. If prosecutors are accused of wrongdoing, they should not be investigating themselves. If I'm accused of malfeasance here at WOSU, I should not be investigating myself, right? I mean, it's...
Police officers argue that they aren't investigating themselves. It's a grand jury. Every police
If it gets that far,
goes to a grand jury. In Columbus, in Franklin County, every deadly use of force goes to a grand jury. So there's a...
Well, I'm not talking about criminal offenses. I'm talking about internal issues.
Yeah, but
I mean this.
No, they do. They argue that there's an independent prosecutor who's elected by the people, reviews these cases, and then he takes that, or she takes that case, to a grand jury, which is made up of citizens. But Governor DeWine and what others folks are advocating is let's take it completely away from the prosecutor, who oftentimes works closely with police.
Sure they do.
To prosecute other cases.
Yeah, sure they do.
Let's put one more layer in between.
This came out on the same day that the city of Columbus announced they were going to adopt the so-called eight can't wait measures of police reform. One obvious measure that I'm really surprised needs to be written down is intervening when you see another officer doing wrong.
Yeah.
Like you have to tell someone?
Obviously, look at the George Floyd case.
I mean, that's shameful that you have to tell police to report wrongdoing.
Yeah. Well, it gives the person who's reporting the wrongdoing some cover. He's not betraying his fellow officer, perhaps even his or her partner. I say, look, if I don't report this, my job's on the line, or I could be charged criminally. So it does give them a little bit of cover, but you're right. If wrongdoing is happening, this is why I'm not sure the government is going to solve this problem. I mean, obviously, policing is part of the government, but I think it does go to the root causes of racism, first and foremost. How we ever solve that, God knows. But it's the culture of policing. It's the us against them culture. It's the war on drugs, the war on crime, the military footing that the police have. That's where the roots of this is. And I don't know how any multi-point program is going to fix that overnight. And DeWine is right. This is a process. This is going to take months and years. And hopefully this is the start of that process, which will keep both sides safe, keep officers safe, and keep the community safe, and keep the community protected.
Another part of the recent protests and police response that was unfortunate in a way is that it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. When officers show up in this tactical gear, covered head to toe in body armor, and then police or protesters, some, not all, a small minority, respond by throwing water bottles at them, police say they need the armor.
Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and police will say they need to be as militarized as they are. That because when you look at gun ownership laws in the United States, they could be walking into a deadly situation in any domestic violence situation. It's a really tough nut to crack, and I don't know if we're going to do it anytime soon, that's for sure.
But when people did show up at the State House with AR-15 assault-style rifles, mm-hmm. police did not show up in tactical gear.
They actually were
holding deadly weapons.
Right, in Michigan, there was that protest became illegal when they were doing things like that. In Ohio, there was no illegal activity.
They were banging on the State House windows.
Was that illegal?
I don't know, but
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying there's a difference.
There was a different response to the two.
There
protests.
Was a different response. That's absolutely
that was obvious, and that has been the focus of criticism.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Snollygoster. Let's get back to that pandemic, of course. Ohio is looking for a new person to lead the fight against coronavirus. As no doubt you know by now, Dr. Amy Acton is out. The director of the Ohio Department of Public Health suddenly quit last week. Her resignation came without warning and only slightly more explanation. She hinted she was burned out, could not effectively do all the things that the job required of her. There is speculation that pressure from conservatives upset over the business closures forced her out, but she says she ignored all that.
You'd be surprised how much a lot of that isn't your focus. I mean, for me, my focus, the need to protect Ohioans and save lives was so intense, especially during this first phase. I can honestly say it had to be a single point meditation on the task at hand.
I'm going to make a very hot take right now. Mike, you ready? Amy Acton, most popular health director in Ohio history.
Probably.
There's no
most
doubt.
Polarizing.
Can I name it? I can't name any others. I've worked in this town for over 10 years now. I've covered state politics for...
We haven't had a pandemic in 100 years, so...
That's the joke. That's what I'm saying.
You could also say she was the most hated health director in Ohio's history.
Yeah, probably. She's a unique figure. She was homeless at times as a youth. She's actually a registered Democrat.
Yep.
This is... DeWine was sort of trying to extend an olive branch, I think, when he named her to his cabinet.
Yeah, he said he wanted a doctor in that position, a physician, a public health professional in that position, instead of a bureaucrat, or now the attorney, the general counsel from the health department is the interim director, until they're doing a nationwide search, Steve, nationwide search.
Just like the Columbus police chief, who is now a longtime Columbus police officer.
I love nationwide searches.
As you mentioned, Amy Acton being replaced by an attorney, Lance Himes. He's the department's general counsel. This is also, I did not know this, this is the third time in 6 years that he has stepped in as interim director. Is there a sports analogy there? Who's the best interim manager of all time?
Oh, I don't know. Had been one of Billy Martin's replacements back in the 70s with the Yankees. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm not buying completely that she left because of the pressure. I think
that's pretty condescending to say that, because DeWine is under a lot of pressure too.
Well, he signed up for that. He's a politician. I always felt bad because she didn't sign up for the politics. She signed up for the public health aspects of this job, and her job is public health and protecting lives, and here she is being hung in effigy at the State House and having protests outside her home. Was that part of the reason why she quit? According to reporting, that is part of the reason, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were other reasons. Maybe it is a combination of everything. Burnout, maybe some disagreements with the governor over the reopening and the speed of the reopening. She had said, she never disagreed with him publicly in those briefings, but she had said that we needed much more testing before we could safely reopen. Same thing that Dr. Fauci said nationally.
Well, DeWine said that. They said that they set a goal of, I think it was 37,000 tests a day, or I forget exactly. It seems like ancient times at this point. But we did not reach that goal at all.
We're still not there yet. But we're reopening, and the cases really have not increased. And the hospitalizations are consistently declining. Deaths are declining here in Ohio. Is that because of the hot weather we're having, or is it because we've done the right thing early on and reopened responsibly? We'll know in another month or so if it was the right decision. And, of course, we all worry about this spike.
Yeah, we're seeing spikes.
Possible spike in the fall when the weather gets cold.
We're seeing them now in Texas, Florida, Arizona, which are all very hot states. So I don't the hot weather is certainly not a panacea for this.
But we've been open almost as long as they have, been reopened almost as long as they have, and we're not seeing those spikes.
Anyway, let's turn now to our weekly segment. Snollygoster of the Week Award. It goes to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week.
This is an easy one this week. John Bolton, the one-time national security advisor, he's coming clean on what he thinks about Donald Trump. His book is pretty damning. The White House, of course, is trying to stop its publication and distribution, saying it's sharing classified information. So what does John Bolton and his publisher do? Well, they leak it to every major news organization. The New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, NPR, even Stephen Colbert has a copy.
Why wouldn't he?
So that's pretty shrewd right there.
That is pretty shrewd. And Bolton says Congress should have impeached the president on many other things besides the Ukraine matter. If only Congress had asked him to testify, Mike.
Imagine that. Wait, they did. But he didn't. He declined.
I hope the book comes out. I'll read it.
I don't think you have to read it, Steve.
You don't have to.
Just buy the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and watch Colbert next week, and you won't have to read it. You'll save the $25 or whatever it costs.
Anyway,
to buy it.
John Bolton gives us a break from Donald Trump being named Snollygoster of the Week. Thanks for that, John Bolton. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. In the meantime, be sure to tell your friends about us. Leave us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And as always, thanks to our audio extraordinaire, Eric French, and our student producer, Jack Wong.
And Michael DeBonis, who does our web stuff for us. For all of them, I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown on Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.